It was definitely a grassroots idea to count the number of men and women on his programme, daily television programme on BBC World TV. And they all prided themselves for getting lots of women on air. But when they actually counted, it was far fewer than they thought. And then you could see across time the numbers there in black and white. And so it wasn't from the bosses that this programme came. It was just the journalists.
Liske, was machen wir denn jetzt gleich?
Ich kann es kaum glauben. Wir moderieren tatsächlich die vorerst letzte Staffel von Macht's gleich an.
Ganz genau, es ist das große Finale. Also holt schon mal die Taschentücher raus. Bisschen traurig ist es ja, aber freuen könnt ihr euch auch. Wir haben zum Abschied super viel Insiderwissen aus der Branche zusammengetragen, um zu gucken, wo gibt es denn schon schlaue Ideen in der Medienlandschaft, die dazu beitragen, Sexismus in Redaktionen zu bekämpfen.
Ja, und Spoiler, wir haben für euch, liebe HörerInnen, sogar unser Schulenglisch ausgepackt. Es wird international.
Ich freue mich. Los geht's.
Macht's gleich. Weg mit Sexismus in den Medien. Ein Podcast von ProQuote.
Hallo und herzlich willkommen zur dritten Staffel von Macht's gleich, dem Podcast gegen Sexismus in den Medien. Wie immer mit mir, Liske Jax.
Und mit mir, Sarah Stendel.
Wir sind Journalistinnen und im Vorstand vom Verein ProQuote Medien, der sich für Gleichberechtigung in den Medien einsetzt.
Wer uns schon länger zuhört, der weiß ja, in den ersten beiden Staffeln von Macht's gleich haben wir mit unseren Gästen darüber gesprochen, was passieren muss, um den Sexismus in den Redaktionen ein für alle Mal ja am besten loszuwerden. Und darüber, was wir auch mit unserer Berichterstattung selbst in der Hand haben, um weniger Sexismus und Vorurteile zu reproduzieren.
In dieser dritten und letzten Staffel wollen wir nochmal das große Ganze anschauen. Was sind schlaue Ideen und vielleicht auch Best-Practice-Modelle für eine diversere Medienlandschaft? Wo läuft es schon gut? Und was können sich andere Verlage und Redaktionen da vielleicht abschauen? Dafür blicken wir auch über den Tellerrand und sprechen mit VertreterInnen von englischsprachigen Medien.
Genau, und gleich heute geht's los mit dem wohl bekanntesten Projekt derzeit überhaupt, der 50-50-Challenge der BBC. Die hat weltweit in der Branche für Aufsehen gesorgt, und zwar mit einem eigentlich ganz simplen Ziel. Sie wollen mehr Frauen on air bringen. In Deutschland haben sich unter anderem der BR, die Deutsche Welle, der MDR oder der NDR angeschlossen. Also das Ding hat richtig Schule gemacht. Und wir haben deshalb Miranda Holt eingeladen. Miranda verantwortet bei der BBC das 50-50 Equality Projekt.
Ja, und sie hat uns erklärt, wie das Ganze überhaupt funktioniert. Und was ich auch echt spannend finde, warum sie mittlerweile sogar eine neue Quoten-Challenge am Start haben, die ganz andere Dinge berücksichtigt als reine Frauenanteile.
Aber bevor wir jetzt gleich in das Gespräch reinhören, gibt's noch eine Neuerung zu verkünden. Diese Staffel hört ja am Ende jeder Folge noch einen Kommentar der Journalistikprofessorin Margret Lünenborg. Wir haben sie eingeladen, weil unsere GästInnen in dieser Staffel natürlich besonders für ihr jeweiliges Best-Practice-Modell brennen, ist klar. Wir fanden aber einen unabhängigen Blick darauf spannend. Margret ist Professorin für Journalistik an der Freien Universität Berlin und sie forscht unter anderem zu Gender Media Studies, der digitalen Transformation im Journalismus und zum Verhältnis von Migration und Medien.
Sie ist außerdem für die wissenschaftliche Leitung der Zentraleinrichtung zur Förderung der Frauen- und Geschlechterforschungen, langes Wort, der FU Berlin zuständig.
Wow.
Und sie war selbst Journalistin, unter anderem bei der Westdeutschen Allgemeinen Zeitung und war auch für verschiedene ARD-Hörfunksender tätig. Also, ihr seht, sie kennt sich richtig aus.
Yes. Ihr werdet uns am Ende jeder Folge also nochmal mit Margret Lünenborg sprechen hören. Jetzt aber erstmal viel Spaß beim Hören mit Miranda Holt über das 50-50-Projekt bei der BBC. Miranda, thank you so much for talking to us today and for taking the time and welcome to the show.
Oh, thank you so much for inviting me. I'm looking forward to chatting.
So let's introduce you first. You're a British journalist and have been working with the BBC for over 20 years, covering political topics. And you've been involved with the famous BBC 50-50 Equality Project. You are now the external partners lead of said project and managing over 100 organizations in 27 countries worldwide who have adopted the project. And we will talk about that for sure in a bit. But first, maybe on a personal note, can you tell us, do you remember when and how you became aware that there's a gender imbalance in newsrooms and also in media content?
Gosh, thank you so much. So I really have been a journalist for a very long time, far too long, at the BBC, working on daily news programmes for a long time. And I think I was aware as a junior journalist with my female junior producers, we were working in a very male-orientated world of news, politics, people in public life. And there's always a sort of effort, you know, to get the programme on air. We need to get someone on air quickly who can speak well and to the point and do a political discussion. So really that was always the priority, rather than thinking, hang on a minute, should I be getting a female voice? And that was very much the discussion a few years ago. Now it's absolutely changed. You know, when I was a young female producer, it was all the bosses were male. And perhaps it wasn't that they were supportive of women, but I guess I just don't remember that being an issue debated in our editorial meetings as a priority. And now when I'm in news programme meetings, there are often female editors who are saying, OK, we'll do a story on climate change or politics or whatever, but who can we get who's a good female contributor? And that is now part of every editorial meeting.
Do you have a programme for this? So 5 years ago, the 50-50 Equality Project at the BBC started. Can you tell us a bit about how you became involved?
Yes. And it's, of course, not to say that we weren't having a discussion about more women on air forever, certainly since I've been working. And it was just that this one idea, which came from a TV presenter, so it was definitely a grassroots idea to count the number of men and women on his programme, daily television programme on BBC World TV. And they all prided themselves for getting lots of women on air. But when they actually counted, it was far fewer than they thought. Mm. And they started using spreadsheets to count every day, every week, every month. And then you could see across time the numbers there in black and white. And so it wasn't from the bosses that this programme came, or the human resources department or the equal opportunities department or anything. It was just the journalists. And the presenter, Roz Atkins, went to talk to other departments about how this was really working for their programme, and it expanded. Then the head of news thought it was a good idea, and then the director general of the BBC, the whole head of the BBC, found out about it, or Roz went to talk to him about it, and he thought it was a fantastic idea, and he encouraged it to expand across the BBC, so not just in news but in television, radio, online, game shows, panel shows, dramas, children's programming, all the online content is all trying to fill in a spreadsheet every day. We've got 750 teams across the BBC counting their data, and then they share it on a huge dashboard so everyone can compare, you know, the 50-50 team can compare the results, and we publish them. But the key thing, the Director General encouraged us to publish it publicly. So now we are held to account. Every year we have an annual report and we update the numbers in gender, in our content.
Just to be clear, the focus was on the content and not necessarily on the people who made the content.
Yes, absolutely. So there's a difference between the content and the workforce, as we call it. And there are many programmes that diversify or make more gender equal the workforce at the BBC, and I'm sure in media organisations in Germany, everywhere, we're all trying to do that. But the 50-50 is a very specific thing, counting content.
So how does it work? What tools do they have? You said there were spreadsheets. Do you yet now have, I don't know, KI, something fancy? Yeah, how does it work in everyday business?
Broadly, we have a contact in every department, 750 teams, reminding them to file their data, etc. So it's on their radar. But the way it's most effective on a daily news programme is, in fact, not on the day, but in the planning, thinking ahead. So when the editor is thinking about their programme the day before, or the planning team is looking ahead in the calendar, when you know there is the climate change talks or the German elections or a continuing story like Russia-Ukraine, cost of living crisis, so these are rolling stories or specific stories, you encourage the teams, the BBC expertise team, so the correspondents, we go to the economics team or the environment team or the politics team to say, can you have a think of five new good female voices that would talk on all these topics? Then we circulate them amongst news via the 50-50 team. Sometimes we're all looking for new people, but actually it's very well established. A female climate change professor at a certain university is just reminding people that there are some really good, well-tested female experts or leaders in their field. I always find it was most effective on my political program that I had an overview of the number of, we always aim for 50-50 every day. We had a panel of political experts talking every day so we could balance them. But I would know across time what our 50-50 numbers were. And then I would know that the next day or the next week, we would need however many extra female voices on the program. So it's having an overview and planning ahead, because absolutely understandably, if you are producing a news program, daily news program, or producing a website, a news website and newspapers or, you know, digital platforms with a busy news agenda, you just need to get the right person on air. You're not really thinking about whether they're male or female.
And what about the quality of content? Do you measure in any way if the content portrays women in stereotypes? For example, if you only have male experts on economy topics, but female experts on family politics, etc.
It's such a good point. And I should say that our 50-50, we have a slogan. There are three rules to 50-50. One is data to effect change. That's filling in the spreadsheets. Two is counting what you can control. And that's really important because, for instance, on my political program, I need to cover people in the news, politicians, but I can't control them, so I don't count them. I only count the people I decide to put on the program. And that is very empowering for program makers, broadcasters. And again, it applies to the print. And the third one is best person gets on air. And that's really important because this can't be seen as token women or second best or a tick box exercise. If the male chief executive of the large company, it's his annual report and he's the right person to do the interview, then we must get him on. This is not about excluding men. It's about rectifying the balance by reaching out and encouraging senior female business leaders. We could develop a sort of greater selection of people who are comfortable doing the media. But it's very interesting. It leads on. So we talk about counting content, but we work with organisations because what was happening with the BBC, it's official in news. When we go to press offices or we contact organisations to request an interview, we feel empowered to say, we're doing 50-50, so if you can't find a female spokesperson, we won't have your organisation on. We'll go to another think tank or university or academic. And that has made organisations think, we need to be on the media. So who are our talented female academics or experts? And we will promote them. We will train them, make them confident, because why is it we women always need a bit of a confidence boost?
It's the same in Germany. It's the same everywhere. We hear it all the time, but you can't necessarily see in the data if there's been stereotypes.
In our spreadsheets, we have different ways of counting things and we can make them very complicated, very simple or very complicated. But we do try and count the difference between a case study. So we don't want the cost of living crisis. The example is a very sad woman cooking, you know, for her children. And then the expert is the authoritative man.
Exactly.
So we count these two things. And again, when you see the numbers, you can think in your mind, hang on, I must get a sad man and an authoritative woman. So yes, we are mindful of that as well.
That sounds like, at least at the BBC, people were, even before the project, very aware that it is a problem at all. Because I can imagine, especially in German media outlets, would be more difficult received, maybe. Do you remember the initial reactions of the teams? Was it hard to convince them to get people on board?
There's always an argument that the news is too busy, the team is too stretched, nobody's around to put the data in. But actually, and it comes back to my first answer, if you've got senior women in the department and then the output editors who are women and the producers, all now much more assertive than we ever were, are thinking about it. And they say in the meeting, we need some more women. If you listen to network radio program and you hear all male voices, it's really unusual now, really jarring. And you'd never see on television, BBC or any other broadcasting media in the UK, an all male panel. And it's interesting when we talk to industry. So we work a lot with a variety of industries. They often say they will not take part in an all-male panel. So even if it's not broadcast, but, you know, an event for the energy industry or a business event or a political event, people are very mindful that they don't want to be on a panel of all men. Life has changed hugely in a generation or even in 10 years.
Okay, but still there are some teams at the BBC who don't follow the project, right?
At a time of change, you know, if your team is being restructured or your job is at risk, the last thing you want is an email from the 50-50 team going, remember the data month. So, you know, we have to balance that quite carefully. And it is inevitably the case. You know, sometimes when we have the one contact who's passionate about it and leaves that team, we have to try and find someone else who will re-engage. But I think broadly, in news terms, they do well at filing their data. So not everybody is getting to 50% women. That's really hard. If you're a three-hour network radio news programme, to get to 50% women and all that is hard. But people really try.
Maybe can you tell us some of the arguments you use to try and convince people who are not on board?
I think the public debate is so live. So the BBC is under constant scrutiny in the public sphere. And I think the audience remarks when they hear a whole hour of male voices. That's one of the reasons, another reason why to do it, because there's an audience impact. There's a business case for reaching out to your audiences, expanding your audiences. Women are 50% of the population. You know, BBC radio and TV are competitive. Of course, we want to appeal to a widest range of audience. And women are very vocal about not feeling they are represented in public life. So I think it's the audience would tell us that.
You called one part of your project the 50-50 challenge, which implies a sort of competition already in the name. Can you tell us about that and maybe also explain how the wording came into place? Are the people competitive now?
Yes, it leads itself to friendly competition. I mean, it's not compulsory to take part in, but across news, it became, within the first or second year, a team would realise that their group of programmes wasn't taking part, and yet all the other programmes were taking part, you know, and they were getting good numbers. You could see that the bosses wanted to be associated with a successful equality project. It was very funny. Even though it was the producers putting in the effort, the bosses would take the credit. That's all fine if that increases the numbers. Challenge implies having to put extra effort in. So once 50-50 was established, because we publish our data every year, we encourage people to take part in the March challenge. And March is the month that we challenge people to get 50% of women in their content. Again, it comes back to the planning of it. I mean, you don't want to put all the effort into March and then collapse in April. We're trying to keep it going. But we do encourage teams. We have a lot of communication, we reach out to teams, and we circulate our experts lists, and we really encourage people just to put that extra effort into finding good female commentators. And I suppose everyone likes a deadline in news or something to focus on. So that's why it's called the challenge.
So it's voluntary, you said. There are no penalties, no rewards for the teams?
No. So it is just the glory of getting to 50% women. We have a monthly email where we'll congratulate teams that have done particularly well, or new teams that have come on board. And it's really interesting. I mean, my favourite sort of anecdote is we have the World Service, so broadcasting all around the world in English language and in local languages. And the head of the Bangladesh service, so the BBC Bangla service, is a man. And he is the most passionate advocate of 50-50. Bangladesh is quite a male-orientated society, but counting what he can control, so the people that he invites on his programme are, you know, female experts or commentators or academics, he's consistently got 50% for a whole year. And so he goes around talking to other World Service teams to motivate them. And they say, gosh, if the Bangla service in Bangladesh can do it, then so can we. So it's a sort of encouragement to be part of this.
Last year, you also introduced a new goal regarding ethnicities and disabilities, which is even bolder than just a quota for women. Tell us about that, please.
It's interesting. So when the current director general became, he was already working at the BBC, but he got the top job nearly 2 years ago now. He set a goal for the workforce, so people who work at the BBC, of 50-20-12, 50% women, 20% people from an ethnic minority, 12% disability, and a new one announced last year was 25% from socioeconomic diversity. This is for the workforce, people who work at the BBC. Mm-hmm. And these reflect UK census percentages of the population. That was how we endeavoured to introduce these targets. Because we are the BBC, we are funded by a licence fee. So very similar for the ARD networks in Germany. It's raised slightly differently, but the ARD network are funded by the public. And therefore, we need to represent society. We ask everybody to pay the licence fee. We need to represent them across all our content, not just in news, obviously, in radio, TV and online. Likewise, we need to attract them to work at the BBC. So that's the workforce project. But in setting those targets, so 50-50 gender, women on air, that's well established. So many teams are doing ethnicity and many teams, slightly fewer, are doing disability. We go to some length to find new voices, to really focus on getting those kind of experts. We often hold events, networking events at Broadcasting House in London, where we'll reach out to certain networks. We had one for disabled experts recently. So what we're after is not particularly disability campaigners, but someone who is a climate change expert who happens to have a disability, or an economist who happens to have a disability. And therefore, inviting people, being inclusive, that people with a disability can be experts on the BBC as well. Mm. It's harder because these are protected characteristics, so you have to gather the data in a slightly different way, although you can do it by perception. But disability is often undeclared or invisible, so that's harder to count, but we have different ways of doing that.
So how do you do it? I want to know, because that's the argument we hear in Germany all the time. That's not possible due to privacy policies.
Obviously, the data protection laws are different. For us in the UK, we have a different debate about ethnicity as you do in Germany, and definitions and data protection. 50-50 started with journalists making programmes, counting the data, rather than being an enormously detailed gathering of diversity information. We go on perception. So gender, that's easy. For ethnicity, you could make an assessment whether somebody's from an ethnic minority or not. And disability, you could also what you perceive. So that's very blunt, you know, unless they're in a wheelchair or have some obvious visible disability, often you don't know. Some programmes contact and get the consent of the contributor to gather their diverse information. So if you get their consent, you can ask them absolutely anything about their diverse characteristics, mm-hmm. if they agree to giving that information. Mm-hmm. That's clearly quite difficult in news. But if you're making a documentary with 20 contributors, you can gather their information with their consent.
So you just mentioned that you worked with the ARD, for example, and we know that you've worked with a lot of international companies to do this project. Deutsche Welle, SWR, Bayerischer Rundfunk, it's all the public broadcasters. Do you know how many German broadcasters or publishing houses are involved?
It's about 10 or so. A couple of ARD networks not yet signed up, but okay. We're on a rolling program. I think Deutsche Welle was the first. They all want to be part of it. And it's fantastic because many of them were gathering data about gender anyway. And so it was quite easy to change the way they gathered the information using our spreadsheets, or we adapted theirs. And the debate was live, you know, for them. It's a discussion and they're beginning with a few teams and then they roll it out gently. It just depends on the organisation. But it's the same principle. It is the effort to try and represent society in the broadcast media. And you are counting what you can control. So, you know, many people say, oh, gosh, Germany's still a very male-orientated society. That may be the case. And, you know, if the politicians are coming on or people in the news, but you're not counting them. It's really what the programme makers can do to make that extra effort to get some good female voices on their programs.
Was there something that stood out to you in Germany that might be specific to German media outlets concerning the program?
Every time I have a discussion with any of the teams, they are mindful that if the bosses are men, senior men who've been there for some time, they might be less in favor of trying it. Sometimes people fear failing. They don't want to start in case their numbers look awful. But we try and say that this is meant to be a positive thing. We publish our annual report, but we don't break it down individually. We aggregate and anonymize all our numbers. So we're not naming and shaming any one broadcaster or region that has particularly bad numbers. It's really a tool for the internal teams to try and improve their numbers, even at their departmental level, not even at a company level. And it's meant to be a positive thing that, you know, you engage, you debate. You need to take everybody with you. I really feel strongly that we need the men involved as well.
What other feedback do you get from the German partners? Do you get feedback like it's easier with the program to do the 50-50? What questions do you hear from them?
So we have terms of agreement, which we ask people to sign. That is the thing that needs to be spread up the system. It's a program that is worth doing. People take it very seriously. It's the same for the BBC in the UK. You know, some teams are fired up and excited to do it and others are reluctant just because they just don't want to fail. They don't want to see their numbers being low. And there's always a reason, you know, if it's politics or economics or whatever, that they feel that there aren't, you know, the female voices out there.
We also read about a program dedicated to establishing colleagues with more diverse socioeconomic backgrounds. Can you tell us a bit more about that?
It is a really big debate in the UK at the moment. Socioeconomic diversity is a big discussion. There's a government set of questions that when you apply for a job in the BBC, and I think in most public bodies, you put your information in. And also we have a staff survey in the BBC. You can prefer not to say, but people generally give their information about their diverse characteristics. So the question is what your parents did when you were 14, what school you went to, and whether you had free school meals. These are three UK government definitions. So you can gather that of the people that work, you know, in an organisation. We were trying to work out a way of how you might count that data or gather that data in content on air. And it's really hard, certainly to do it in news. It's very difficult. You can't, you know, live on air or before you go on air. Oh, do you mind? Do you mind if I just ask you some information about your background? It's difficult. We are thinking of trying to do a pilot. So there was one plan from the 6 o'clock news. The main bulletin was going to look at the postcodes of people that featured in the programme. But it's quite complicated because you need to brief the correspondents that are doing the story, that all the people they speak to in their piece. Somebody is gathering the postcodes of those people. It's a very complicated thing, but I think there is a desire to try and do that. The BBC is very aware that, again, because we're paid for by the licence fee, we need to represent people across the United Kingdom, but also hear from people across the United Kingdom. And our news, it's different from the, you know, German regional network, but we have various news bureaus all around the UK, and we very much emphasise, you know, if we're doing a cost of living crisis, we'll do it from the north of England, from a city there or a town there. We're definitely not all based in London, and a lot of news teams have moved out of London, and there's big investment by the BBC, not just in news, but across the UK.
What would you say, how successful has this project been?
I've been at the project for a year and a half and I've doubled the numbers from 70 to 150. And it's certainly the case that there are some teams that are doing it very actively. COVID was a big moment for lots of teams to stop. So to re-engage people, I'm busy trying to re-engage some people, some teams that were started 3 years ago but have stopped. So at the moment, I'm funded by the license fee. But we are going to move to a tiered membership model because the license fee is cut. So we will focus on the internal side. So to carry on the external side, we're going to have to ask people to pay a bit. And there are big commercial companies we work for. I'm sure they could afford a bit. So spread the cost just so that we can continue this fantastic project. But people really want to be associated with this international benchmarking of diversity and content. It makes you very proud to work for the BBC.
So what would you say has been the biggest challenge of the project so far?
It was interesting, you know, for broadcasters, we adapted very quickly. And I don't know about in Germany, but in UK, suddenly everybody was perfectly able to work from home. And I'd never heard of Zoom. And now I use Zoom every day. And I think, you know, it's absolutely changed work practices and people can communicate. And in fact, it's interesting. It has allowed more women to do more broadcast interviews, I think, because you can take out 10 minutes out of your time if you were at home, instead of going to a television studio or a radio studio. And actually now this is excellent broadcast quality. So this is how even big television programs will do, people sitting at their laptops from home. That's definitely a positive thing. With all this, you would think that the debate about gender equality is well established. Surely we've achieved it. But oh no, we need to keep re-engaging. And that's the thing. Even at the BBC, where 50-50 is well established, we need to keep talking about it, re-engage teams, keep spreading the word, really. We're approaching 5 years, so that will be a moment. We need to keep it fresh. There's an audience desire for it, for whatever organisation that does it. There's an audience or a client or a business reason. It makes good sense to better represent society in all aspects of media and public life.
Sadly, we have to come to an end. Miranda, our podcast is called Macht's Gleich, which is a play on words in German, meaning make it equal, but also do something as quick as possible. And therefore, we always ask each of our guests if there was one thing that you could do immediately to change the status quo of your field of work, what would be your wish to get everyone on a 50-50 project?
To convince all teams that it's not difficult and they can just think of two good female people in the public life or whatever industry they work in and to invite them to go on their programme. So I'm talking from a media perspective, or any organisation should be thinking just two, find two people that you think, you know, should be in the public domain as part of public life. And it follows that these people will be interesting and enlightening and make our society much more equal.
Yeah, let's hope for that. Miranda, thank you so much for your time. It was so great talking to you.
It's a great pleasure.
Um besser einschätzen zu können, ob das 50-50-Modell auch in Deutschland funktionieren könnte, haben wir unsere Expertin Marit Lünenborg befragt. Sie ist Professorin für Journalistik an der Freien Universität Berlin. Wie wichtig ist denn der Rückhalt in der Gesellschaft, um 50-50 in den Medien zu etablieren? Die Briten sind laut Miranda Holt beim Thema Geschlechtergerechtigkeit schon viel weiter als wir. Miranda sagte uns zum Beispiel, ein Panel, das nur aus Männern besteht, wäre bei der BBC gar nicht mehr denkbar.
Wenn Medienorganisationen sich das zu eigen machen und das auch öffentlich kommunizieren, ist das meines Erachtens ein wichtiger sozusagen Schalter, um das weiter in die Gesellschaft zu transferieren. Das heißt, der Impuls muss an dieser Stelle aus den Medienorganisationen selbst kommen und dann mit Gesellschaft deliberiert, verhandelt, im Austausch immer wieder erörtert werden. Es ist unrealistisch, andersrum zu fragen, dass jetzt plötzlich die Gesellschaft an die Türen von Medienorganisationen anklopft und sagt, ihr müsst jetzt mal ein Monitoring machen. Entscheidend ist, dass das von einer Medienorganisation gewollt ist und dass das tatsächlich implementiert wird in die Routinen von Produktionsprozessen. Das Herzensanliegen der meisten JournalistInnen ist es ja selber, Themen auch zu identifizieren, zu recherchieren und längerfristig zu planen. Und in diesen Prozess eben systematisch mit reinzunehmen, dass bei der Identifikation von Expertise eine Balance zwischen Männern und Frauen mindestens, wenn nicht noch zwischen anderen Teilgruppen von Gesellschaft vorgenommen wird, wäre dann ein Baustein, der in so einen Arbeitsprozess von Anfang an mit eingebaut werden müsste.
Wir wissen, in deutschen Medienhäusern wird gespart, wo es nur geht. Wie realistisch ist es da überhaupt, ein Team aufzubauen, das sich nur um die Geschlechterquote der Medienerzeugnisse kümmert?
Naja, ich bin gar nicht sicher, ob es da so große Personalressourcen braucht. Wir müssen ja andersrum auch sehen, dass wir mit digitalen Technologien, mit künstlicher Intelligenz erhebliche Erleichterungen haben. Das heißt, wir arbeiten in unserem Fach damit relativ viel, dass man automatisierte Inhaltsanalysen machen, die erstmal relativ simpel mit der Identifikation von Vornamen Männer und Frauen unterscheiden können. Das ist dann keine 100% Trefferquote, aber doch eine sehr solide Sättigung.
Was müsste denn passieren, damit das Modell auch in Deutschland mehr Anklang findet und funktioniert?
Das, was die BBC macht, ist natürlich nicht 1:1 in jegliche Medienunternehmen übersetzbar. Das müsste adaptiert und auch zugeschnitten werden auf Medienunternehmen unterschiedlicher Größenordnung und unterschiedlicher Strukturen. Ich denke, es ist kein Zufall, dass bislang primär öffentlich-rechtliche Rundfunkanstalten sich daran anschließen oder das selber sich zu eigen gemacht haben, weil der öffentliche Auftrag, den diese Rundfunkanstalten qua Gesetz haben, zunehmend sie selber verpflichtet und sie diese Verpflichtung auch annehmen, tatsächlich eine Repräsentation von Gesellschaft in ihr Programm zu verankern. Wir sehen sowohl auf der Ebene des Personals wie auf der Ebene der medialen Repräsentation, dass lokale, regionale Tageszeitungen, aber auch Agenturen sich da nach wie vor wirklich schwer tun. Da halte ich es für notwendig, aber auch nochmal für ein ganzes Stück Arbeit, vergleichbare Instrumente für diese Unternehmen zu entwickeln und dann tatsächlich auch einzubauen in die Produktionsstrukturen.
Vielen herzlichen Dank an unsere Expertin Margret Lünenbock. Wenn euch diese Folge gefallen hat, dann folgt uns doch auf eurem liebsten Podcast-Anbieter und lasst uns eine positive Bewertung da, sehr gerne. Außerdem könnt ihr auch ProQuote Medien auf Instagram, Facebook oder neuerdings auch auf LinkedIn folgen. Wir freuen uns ganz doll über Likes und Feedback. Also, wir sagen bis zum nächsten Mal. Macht's gut.
Macht's gleich. Tschüss.
Tschüss. Goodbye.
Macht's gleich. Weg mit Sexismus in den Medien. Ein Podcast von ProQuote, gefördert vom Bundesministerium für Familie, Senioren, Frauen und Jugend, produziert von Pool Artists.